Welcome to iHeart Geek.
And welcome to another episode of iHeart Geek.
No, I know his wife.
Start in history.
That's burned into my
brain. You knew Blythe was going to carry that on to recording.
I couldn't even do my normal opening because
I'm so glad for that. It was so worth it.
Ruined it. Ruined the day.
Tommy did it.
Keep on geeking on, everybody.
Blythe is out. Blythe is
out. Somebody's getting fired after this episode.
Can you fire us when we don't get paid?
I can. I can no longer request your services.
That's true. Well, you can also lock us out of the Zoom.
I can do that.
Earlier. That's true.
Oh, shut up. Let it go.
Let it go.
And we're getting sued by Disney. Ba-dum, ba-dum. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, well.
So today we went through some quick and sudden changes, and we'll get to that in a minute. We are discussing Benicio del Toro.
No, we're discussing Guillermo del Toro.
Benicio I studied for the wrong guy.
Yeah. Oh, no. Basically, Dub just watched The Wolfman on repeat, not realizing it's the wrong del Toro.
And Sin City. I watched Sin
City.
It's
true, and Sin City. Yes. Yeah.
Now, I would like to see Del Toro could have done an awesome job with Sin City. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Guillermo.
Agreed.
Because today is brought to you by creepy and fantastic visuals, which is really, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I will be getting schooled on this episode because my Del Toro knowledge kind of begins and ends with Hellboy and Blade 2. Yeah, bite me on the Blade 2 thing. That's not a good start. So let's introduce the whole panel. I'm Dub, and I guess I wrote this or kind of wrote this. We all wrote this week. This is a combined group effort.
Okay,
and then we have Miss Courtney. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm under the
water. Yes, yeah. I'm under the sea for The Shape of Water. Don't sue us, Disney, because I'm talking about The Shape of Water.
And Under the
Not
Sea.
Sebastian the Crab.
Right.
But there may have been crabs in that from what you guys are talking about. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, but I've heard bad things.
Wonderful.
Yeah. We'll get to it.
So
we'll
good.
We'll get to it, I promise.
Award-winning.
And then we have Satomi. How are you doing?
Feeling very judgmental about you today.
This has been a kind of an ongoing thing.
Well, you know what it is. You're so much fun to judge.
You are harshing on me.
I am
on the Dr. Horrible. I'm like, oh my gosh.
And the thing is, people who know me will tell you I'm really not a judgy person at all. It's just
just to me.
Well, it's like you are wrong.
It's just too easy.
You're just wrong so often.
Oh. I'm so glad I can go into this episode saying I don't know anything, so I can say whatever I want. You guys can't be all judgy.
We're
still judging you.
Okay. I think that's a pretty big boast, because I think we can still be judgy, and you can still not know anything about Del Toro.
I am so sorry that I said that. This might be a rough episode after all. And then we have our buddy Blythe. How are you doing, y'all? You young curmudgeon, you?
What's up, everybody? I'm doing all right.
Today. You're all trimmed. It's like, I mean, you're more trimmed than last week, I think.
Does Ben keep grabbing it?
Is that what you got to do?
Yep, that's what Ben.
That's
if I let it
fun.
Go not too long, then Ben just grabs it. And he finds a way now. He still gets his hands right up in there and just yanks it as hard
as
he can.
That's kind of hurt, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. When my kids were really young, my goatee was about down to there. You can't see that if you're an audio person, but down to my chest, my kids used to literally try to swing from it. They would not let go.
Like, dude, if I were there and your goatee was down to your chest, I would freaking try to swing from it. You
I
can't
have pictures.
Tangle
I'll,
that
I'll,
out
I'll
there.
Share them I just, later. Wow. We're going to be off the rails a little bit today.
That's the best kind.
Yeah. Blythe, talk about our guests that aren't here today, and we just want to send a little love out to them.
Yeah, so today we were supposed to have some good friends of mine, Ryan and Deidre, from the Foolish Mortal Supply Co. They were supposed to join us, but unfortunately they had a loss in the family. So they did have to miss this episode. We will definitely have them on here soon because just like you guys and myself, they are huge geeks of all types of fandom. So we will definitely have them on, and our love and prayers go out to them and their family.
Driven monkey. Okay, so I'm going to start right off and throw the question out that isn't on our script at all, because we wrote a script, so why use it?
Right.
So can you guys explain to me the base, what is Del Toro, what's the deal? I mean, it's a fair question. I know the visuals are absolutely amazing with Del Toro. I can't even tell you which world it's from. But what's the deal? I know you guys all have a deep love of Del Toro. So kind of what's the deal with Del Toro?
I feel like he's really just the deepest, darkest, most like psychologically intricate fairy tale. Like he knows how to tap into those subconscious who's afraid of the dark, creepy crawlies that we can't, you know, that you can't even name from when you were a kid. Like for back when, you know, the real fairy tales, how dark the real fairy tales are.
Yeah, don't read those if you have kids.
yeah, the original versions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although, of course, you know, I had that book when I was a kid. So, hey, this is what happens, y'all.
I was about to say the exact same thing. He is not afraid to dive into that part of storytelling that makes a fairy tale darker. He takes that and he runs with it. Not that he's afraid to tell those stories, but he capitalizes on it and he builds worlds around it. And he makes these beautiful stories that are terrifying. Pan's Labyrinth being one of the biggest ones. That story is such a great and beautiful story, but there's just some parts of it that are just terrifying, and that's what he does, is he makes those things just so beautiful when he has complete control, I should say.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely some projects
are we talking about The Hobbit again?
The Hobbit he walked away from before they even started production. Yeah. So I don't think that so much is his fault, but I'm talking things like Pacific Rim. The first Pacific Rim, I loved it. It was great visually, it was great. When they did the second one, he was like executive producer on it, but he didn't have any hands in it, and it just lost all sense of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and he's very good at meshing horror and gothic horror with romanticism at the same time.
Yeah.
So I mean, like if you look at Pan's Labyrinth, it's terrifying. It's a terrifying glimpse into the human psyche, but there's also this childlike romanticism and innocence that floats through it all.
Mm-hmm.
And Crimson Peak is gothic horror, but there's also a love story. And same thing with The Shape of Water. I mean, so he's really good at meshing these two genres that really shouldn't go together together in a really workable and believable and beautiful kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds way deep.
Under the sea.
The more you guys have been talking about Del Toro as we've been coming up on this episode, the more I want to watch it. But I kind of didn't want to ruin myself for it because I didn't want to have too much of an opinion coming in.
Well, you didn't want to be wrong again.
I'm never wrong. I was wrong once when I thought I was wrong. And then I realized, I'm not.
No, you're not wrong. You're allowed to have your
wrong. Horrible. So, which worlds? I don't know how many worlds we can say that Del Toro has created, but which world would you, as a person, want to live in?
None.
Survive the rest of your life in this world. Which one would you take? Let's start with Bly's on that one, because this was a Bly's question, I think.
For me, Pacific Rim, 100%.
Do you want to fight those monsters all the time?
Yeah, to be a pilot of a Jaeger and just fight the giant
Kaiju.
Yeah, the Kaiju.
Kaiju.
To fight the Kaiju, like,
love Charlie Day in that movie, by the way.
Yes. to be able to experience something like that, like that's the world that I want to live in, where I can suit up and get into a giant mech and just fight giant monsters.
before I go to everybody else, and this is dealing with Pacific Rim, like with the whole melding of the minds and all that, is there always some weird, I don't know the right word, just a twist to everything with Del Toro? I mean, because that's just, I mean, the mm-hmm. you know, the melding of the mind thing is like, that's some weird stuff when you think about it.
Well, but yeah. That's what he does. He
is that always, or is that just for that movie?
I don't know if it's necessarily a twist, but he just has, he has a great way of telling stories that are, that feel a little bit different than things that have come before it. How many times have we seen giant monsters fighting giant robots? But he took that concept and he gave it a personal feel. So these people who are piloting these robots, they have a connect, they have to have some sort of connection to be able to do it.
It made
it's
it
not,
weird.
It's not just to do it to do it, but that's the thing, is you, instead of just having some guy jumping into a robot and fighting it, there is actual personality behind it. And I think that's just what he does.
If he would have made Voltron, would they have all five of had to have melded? I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, they would have.
That would have been cool.
Fair enough question. Courtney, what about you? What's your world you want to live in? I'm going to guess The Shape of Water, because
no,
that's what you talk about all the time. I still haven't seen it, so I don't know. I refuse to look it up because you guys are scaring me.
It's so good, though.
No, it's such a good movie.
It's so good.
So good.
Well, I mean, Shape of Water takes place in the 1950s in the United States. So
that is your,
like,
that is your genre.
That is 40s.
Kind of, 40s. So, yeah, I would say that. I mean, maybe Crimson Peak, if there wasn't, like, the scary red ghost that comes out of the floor when I'm trying to nap.
So tell me, what about you?
You know, it is a really tough question. And actually, I think it's one that came from me.
Oh, here we go. I got to claim credit.
So, see, always wrong.
No, I'm just saying.
Doesn't matter what he's doing or what the subject is. He's wrong most of the time.
Y'all harsh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, this is, but, what does this mute button do that's right over Blythe's face? Oh.
No.
Can't mute me.
Mutiny. Uh-huh. Okay. So bad. You know, it's a hard one. It's actually the reason that I asked it, because all of his worlds are dystopian in some way. Something's terribly wrong in every single one of them. Mm-hmm. If we're talking just time period, I'm so down with Crimson Peak. But there's something about, even though it scares the bejesus out of me, there's something about the fairy tale-ness of Pan's Labyrinth and how... I mean, I would probably want to be one of the creatures that tests her instead of her. But there's also a... eyeballs in the hand. It's just the...
Somebody sent that in the chat, and I was like, yeah. I don't like you guys. That's not cool.
But yeah, it is a stroke of genius. But just there's always a kind of a, like a justice is served at the mm-hmm. end, you know, and yeah. she ends up in that amazing, beautiful kingdom. So I... You know, I think with all the struggles that we go through in life, if we know that there's that amazing, beautiful kingdom at the end, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing there's a spoiler there. I haven't seen it, but, you know, I'm guessing.
There's going to be a lot of spoilers for you, because you haven't seen anything but Hellboy.
And well, and actually, Blade I did too. Want to discuss about
and Blade 2.
I don't want to discuss that, but I do want to discuss the Hellboy thing, especially the Hellboy 2. I mean, that world, to me, I don't know why no one said that they'd want to live in that world. That's living in a fairy tale.
Yeah.
There's bad guys, but they're not really bad. I mean, they're doing their own thing. You could be a normal person there and live a very happy life talking to weird fairy trees and, you know, that kind of weird stuff constantly. And you'd get to freaking meet Hellboy. So, I mean, that'd be cool. So I'm surprised no one said anything like that, because that seems like a pretty safe world for me.
Well, full disclosure, I have not seen Hellboy 2. I have seen Hellboy really? 1.
Hellboy yeah, 2 was Hellboy 2. So much better.
Hellboy 2 is so good. They're both then good. I wish they would have finished that trilogy.
Yeah, there was no reason. We're not talking about that remake crap.
Yeah.
So we're not bad. Happy.
Man, so bad.
Yeah.
I do want to honorable mention two things. One is Blade 2. Because it's technically in the Marvel universe, and I want to live in that universe. Okay. And I don't know if any of you seen it. Have any of you seen Troll Hunters on Netflix?
I've heard of it.
I think I've seen it. It's episodic, correct?
Yeah, it's a it's completely animated.
I've seen the first couple episodes, and it actually looks kind of great.
It's fantastic, and it Dub, you would like it because it has that like underground fairy tale world that Hellboy does. But he made Troll Hunters, and then the place where it takes place is Arcadia, and then he made two more series that falls into the Tales of Arcadia, and he did what he does, and he meshed all these genres. So one is about like trolls, one is about aliens, and then one's about wizardry, and he meshed all these genres together into one like universe. And it's super super cool, and that world is a really cool world to live in as well.
So you guys are all Del Toro experts, so you guys have to know everything about it. So here's my question. Is everything that he does, is it practical effects built on CGI? Is it CGI completely? What are we talking as far as the effects go? Because, I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about Del Toro. I think he's an okay storyteller. I think his visuals are...
This guy doesn't know nothing.
Incredible. This is my observance. Relax.
I hope he's right here on my screen so I can...
I actually
that's the Tomy on our screen, my screen. So, he uses both. What he's good at, or what his effects team is good at, is the meshing of the two. Mm-hmm. So you've got something like, I'll go back to Shape of Water. So you've got the creature, you've got the fish man, the gill man, who looks like Abe Sapien from Hellboy. If that helps.
Absolutely,
I did not.
Yeah, I'm sure they based it on there. Now, it's all practical effects. So inside that suit is Doug Jones. Mm-hmm. But his eyes blink and his gills go up and down and he glows some places. Yeah, I mean, and to a certain point, the eyes might actually be. But I mean, the other thing is so there's the practical effect of him being in this giant latex and silicone suit with all the prosthetics, but it's also like he glows at one point in time, and so the glowing comes from the CGI effects. And
to be fair, I kind of knew the answer to this because I think that
it's a
mix. Practical effects are what actually humanizes everything, even in these fantastical worlds. It may have the CGI. But the practical effects is what humanizes things, and that's important.
Most of his monsters are practical effects monsters.
I think he uses practical as much as he can, but he's not afraid to use CGI when he has to get that shot and to do the things that he wants to do while he's making the film. Because even in Shape of Water, there's a scene where water fills an entire room. I think it fills her entire apartment, right?
Yeah.
And that scene, the way that they filmed it, is it's smoke and lighting. So he made a practical effect to where he filled the entire room with smoke and then lit it so that it looks exactly like water, like they're underwater. Yeah, and it looks amazing. It's a beautiful, beautiful scene.
Yeah.
Well, he has a background as a special effects makeup artist, so he understands, he already understands the foundation of what he's trying to get on film. So, yeah.
And again, I don't think you can get that out of the CGI. You can't, no matter how perfect it would look, it's that human factor that comes with the practical effects. And this, honestly, and that's something I really respect with a filmmaker. When they go for this awesome stuff, it's great, but if you're acting in front of the green screen, Marvel, you know, it gets a little repetitive. But
it's why things like Jurassic Park worked so well. It's why Baby Yoda works so well, because it's that combination.
Why? There's so many things you could have pulled from, and you pulled the worst one, the worst practical effects ever been created.
Why are you surprised?
Ever been created, the worst practical effects. And
he's fantastic.
Hold it.
No, I would say the worst practical effect is the baby decorator for Twilight.
I never watched that.
I've never seen the movie, but I've seen the baby.
Oh, you want to hear a creepy practical effect? Is train spotting the baby when it's the baby that's crawling on the ceiling? I'm grossed
so many,
out now.
So many better baby references than Baby Yoda.
She just cheesed you off, fool.
Like Rosemary's Baby. Anyway, so
yeah,
dark on it. Okay, so let's change gears a little bit. I have a question all written out here for everything. What established story would you like to see Del Toro make? This is talking a movie that's been made, a fairy tale. What movie would you like to see Del Toro make? And I want to throw in mine. And yes, you know, all praise to the TV series that came out. But I would like to see a movie of American Gods with Del Toro, because I would like to see him make that world, you know, better. Really flush in with our world. Or Fables, either one of those two. That's the two
he would do a great job with Fables. Fables would be a fan. I would like to see Fables turned into a show and him spearhead that show.
I'm in.
Yeah.
And if you guys haven't read Fables, Bill Willingham, it's, what is it, about 20 different graphic novels? Highly suggested. One of my top three graphic novel stories of all time, if you haven't read it. But anyway, so what about you, Courtney?
I don't know. Go to Satomi, because I'm still thinking what we...
Okay. Well, go to Satomi.
Well, I agree with both of you guys. I think somebody needs to hand him a series. And it might be the most obvious choice, but I think if he did Alice in Wonderland, that it could be really dark and weird and crazy. I know they've done the movies, and I know Tim Burton's gone all over the place with it, but I just think he could take it to a whole new place. And I'd also love him to see him do something, you know, something that's episodic, like, you know, Arabian Nights, like A Thousand and One Arabian Nights. Something where he
can, that would be cool.
You know, just kind of keep rolling with it and let his imagination run wild.
Yeah.
Maybe some Greek tales. I'd like to see what he could do with Theseus and the Minotaur.
Ooh.
Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. Someone in this, I believe it's someone in this group, I don't know who said it, but it's, define Del Toro as Tim Burton without the sweetness. Who is it that said that? Yeah, that.
I think Del Toro could also be described as what Tim Burton would like to be, but he doesn't quite get there.
That's I'm more on that page. He's definitely what Tim Burton wants to be, but Tim Burton is nonsense.
Yeah, because Tim Burton is Tim Burton. I love Tim Burton. Don't get me wrong. I love him, and I love his stuff.
He's the Baby Yoda of directing.
The quality of his stuff has gone down over the years. Wow. But like
everybody's does, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, but he goes for that dark and twisted, but he tends to veer more toward completely childlike, where Del Toro kind of goes in the darker.
He's the creepy babysitter that tells the creepy story to the kids.
That's it.
I didn't mean that in a bad way at all.
In the fun way.
Yeah.
Yeah. The babysitter that doesn't quite know the limits of what horror story they should be telling a 3-year-old.
Let the 6-year-olds watch Nightmare Before.
I think it's
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
This is a true story for you, isn't it, there, Courtney?
No.
No.
I never saw Nightmare Before Nightmare on Elm Street before I was 13. Krueger scared the snot out of me. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, please. He scared the snot out of all of us.
Would you?
And even like the old Disney stuff, like Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah, Mr. Dark.
Watcher in the Woods, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I met Jonathan Pryce one time when I was in London backstage, and I looked at him. It was in the greeting line, and I said, "You scared the hell out of me for most of my childhood, Mr. Dark." And he said, "Thank you, my darling. That was the point."
Wow, that's very sweet, actually.
That's like very sweet. Yeah. He's probably had a bunch of kids. He probably had a bunch of people our age say the same thing. So
I'm sure.
He's probably used to it at that point.
Go ahead, Blythe.
To go back to the what projects we'd want to see him do, and this is kind of a shout out to my friends Ryan and Deidre, because they base their whole company off it, is the Haunted Mansion. So Disney's original Haunted Mansion, if you go behind the lore that Disney was taking when they created the ride, and I think it's much more prevalent in Disney World than it is in Disneyland. And it's been rumored that he's supposed to be taking it for a while now, but that story and that lore from that ride could potentially be something that he would really, really excel at, with that whole Victorian haunted haunted house type thing.
I agree.
How do you think he would handle doing, like, if he was to recreate the ride? Not the movie, not as a movie, as the ride. Do you think that would be his, in his...
I think it would be fantastic, because I think Disney would give him the resources to create, to make those. So like we were talking about before, like all of his creatures and his monsters are all practically done and they're all beautifully done. They would give him the resources to put those creatures within something that would stand the test of time. So the Haunted Mansion, the ride, has been around for 50 plus years at this point. I think they just celebrated their 50th anniversary. A few years ago.
He is the producer for the new Haunted Mansion movie.
So he's just producing it. He's not.
So far, he might end up being the director too. So currently he's listed as the Haunted Mansion producer.
So if they give him a little bit more, I think that it really could be something special.
I think something that happens or has happened kind of over the last maybe 20 years is that softening of children's scary children's tales, so it's taken the teeth out of them. And honestly, I miss that. I mean, I loved that thrill when I was a kid. I loved hiding behind the couch and looking
there through my is the line papers. For it though, like the Doctor Who, I mean, that is, I think that is pretty much the line for a kid, you know, the Monster Studios they had, especially back then. I think that was a lot closer to, that's the line where a kid can handle and look through their eyes without being, you know, peeing their pants every time they don't want to leave their bed because they're so scared. You know, I think that's where the line is. I think we lose the line a lot, and I think the line's gone way down. But
well, it just also depends on the kids. Like, I just recently watched The Little Mermaid with the nieces, and the four-year-old scared to death of Ursula, and especially Flotsam and Jetsam, the eels.
Really?
The six-year-old, a little scared. Yeah, that just, she would cover her eyes every time those eels would come on screen. It was like, no. And usually she's the one that's out there laughing her little head off at scary things. But so I think it just depends on the kid.
Yeah, it depends on the kid. Through the eyes of a child, those eels with their sharp teeth and the way they move.
Very
and
snake-like.
The darkness of the scenes.
The voice too, just
exactly.
Just
it's
was
just
not
essentially
having
what
any
you're
of
saying
it.
Is it's good I don't have kids, because I would just scare the living snot out of them on a regular basis.
You'd greet them and good morning, kids.
This is something my dad always brings up because he thinks it's hilarious. But when I was a little kid, Scooby Doo, the opening scene with the bats, when the bats
come
out of the scream. Terrified me. I'd run out the room. Like, it had nothing to do with Scooby-Doo or anything like that, but that's that first part when those just bats would come out.
That's why you don't like Baby Yoda, because he's got little ears like bats.
There you go.
Wow.
Latent hostility.
Head shrunk you.
No, there's two movies that traumatized me as a kid, and one of them was The Howling, and the other one was Poltergeist.
Those were scary.
The one with when he's pulling his face off, still freaks me out to this day. And I was like six
or seven.
For the inchworm
steak?
Oh, stop.
Mine was Something Wicked This Way Comes. The scene specifically where he imagines spiders all over him. And the original It miniseries.
Tim
Curry is Pennywhite. Yeah.
Tim Curry was scarier than this new guy. Sorry.
Yeah. Oof. Actually, that would be interesting to see Del Toro.
Either one
of those.
I have one more suggestion that I would like to see him do, and that'd be Labyrinth. I know that's
that would be really cool too.
That would be amazing.
But That he's the only person I think that I would be comfortable sitting into that, into that that Henson property.
I'd hand him the sequel in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah.
But along the lines of what Blythe was saying, while you were mentioning Haunted Mansion, it got me thinking he would be really interesting to do a Tower of Terror.
Oh yeah.
Movie. Yes. Cuz there was one years ago when they released the ride, it's Steve Gutenberg in it. But it would
that was so dismissive. Because, oh my god. Steve Gutenberg. Well, by the way, next week we have Steve Gutenberg coming on, so
right. At Disney World, the Hollywood Tower of Terror still exists. It's only been changed to Disneyland.
Yeah.
And so yeah, along the lines of that, it'd be really interesting to see what he came up with for
standing
Tower of Terror.
Okay, let's move on and let's take a little break, and then we're going to come back with our listener feedback.
And now let's see what all of our geek rock stars have to say.
Okay, so for today's listener feedback, we asked, what is your favorite Del Toro project and why? And of course, as always, I don't read these. Courtney, go to town.
I do them. So we got a lot of great feedback. So thank you, guys. We appreciate it.
With the vibrato. Keep it
coming. Yes.
Guys.
So keep it coming. So our good friend Christina says, Pan's Labyrinth. She's always been thrilled by the story of Peter Pan, which is what she thought it was about when she first sat down to watch it.
Oh, God.
That's amazing.
No.
That's fantastic.
The movie blew me away with the darkness and the intrigue and vivid imagery, and she loves it that the fact that it even made Stephen King squirm, and he's gone on record and said that.
I don't know anyone who has not been like unnerved by that film. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
at least at some point.
Well, you haven't seen it, Dub.
I'm just saying, I'm the exception to the rule, dog. You know, hey.
I'm gonna break the rules because usually I don't read them if you don't tell me why, but I'm gonna do it anyways today. Mm. So Matthew Bellin says, hands down, Hellboy and Pacific Rim. Why, Matthew?
Why? Why?
Why?
That's all he had to say. Those are great movies.
Because they made me feel ways about things. Huh?
Podcast. Right. Podcast. Says Pacific Rim, which is going to be a theme, because of the practical effects, and he says he also loves a good kaiju film.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Cathcart says Hellboy, and why isn't Blade 2 mentioned? Just kidding about Blade 2. Why do you like Hellboy, Jonathan? Why? Why?
Everybody this is John from California, by the way. That was John from California, by the way, if y'all remember him from forever ago.
Daniel Houston says, Daniel Houston says, Hellboy, it's such a well-done movie. The visual effects, the storytelling, and Ron effing Perlman as Hellboy. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Perfect
Ron Hellboy. And
you gotta love the big baby. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Our good buddy TC says, Pacific Rim for me. The kaiju story was epic, but the human story was titanic. Great CGI, superhumanistic storytelling, and a fine job of carrying the story by Charlie Hunnam and Idris Elba. And come on, giant robots. I agree. Yeah. Giant robots.
Did that come out the same time as Robot Jocks, though? Do you guys remember Robot Jocks?
No one
knows what you're talking
about. It's not that old. It's with Hugh Jackman. It's not that old.
Oh, that's Real Steel.
Real Steel, whatever. Same.
Based on Robots.
How did you get Robot Jocks?
They're the same thing. It's the same movie.
It's like yes. Rock 'em Sock 'em Robots.
They're all the same. All three of these movies are the exact same movie. Boy, with the Del Toro, there's a twist. Their minds meld.
No. What are you talking about? Real Steel's about robots that box.
Yeah.
Not about
the Rock 'em Sock 'em Robots.
So you're saying that they're just the same movie because a robot throws a punch.
They're big robots.
They're not that big.
They're big.
They're a little bit bigger than regular humans.
They're bigger than me. I'm good.
What I like about that movie is when they first started promoting it, it was like this deep, dark, psychological film. And then everybody realized that it was just a movie about life-size Rock'em Sock'em Robots game. And then it became the feel-good family of the year. Like, yes.
And then Robot Jocks was before that.
Yeah, oh,
look it up.
There's nothing called Robot Jocks. That's not a real thing.
There is. I'm going to look it up while she's reading.
Before your time, 10-year-old.
While she's reading these, I'm going to look this up.
Sean Washington says, in my heart, it's a tie between Hellboy and Pacific Rim. As an avid reader of graphic novels and comic books, it lifted my geekiness and fandom to another level when watching both of these wonderful movies. I love watching movies that are a grand journey with a phenomenal story deep down. I had a moment like unto Pat Brady's comic strip, Rose is Rose, when watching both of these movies, where I reverted to it as a child and raptured with the telling of a fantastic story at bedtime. That's real deep, Sean.
That's awesome. That's great response.
I'm a little touched.
Brandon Allen McClanahan. Brandon, really, dude? All you put was definitely Pan's Labyrinth.
You know what I love, Courtney, is you have like mom looks down pat. Really?
Kinda. You didn't I used to work in a daycare.
So imagine all of you. I give the nieces Courtney's best mom right there.
I give the nieces that look sometimes too. They'll go do something. I'll be, you sure you should be doing that? Did you ask your mom? Anyways, we have one more. Michelle Silva says Pan's Labyrinth. Overall, for the imagery and the feel of the film, it's dark and feels dreary while at the same time so full of love and lightness. Hellboy is a close second because it's just an awesome film. Agreed. And I'm so in love with the characters. So that is our listener feedback. Thank you, everybody, for all of your listener feedback, except for those of you who didn't tell me why. I expect a full report on my desk at the end of the podcast.
Okay, I have to admit my mistake. It's not Robot Jocks, it was Robo Warriors. And yes, it's,
oh, but you know what, Robot Jocks does exist.
Oh, it does. Okay.
1989, an yes. hour and 25 minutes.
It's post World War III.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
same thing.
Okay. War is outlawed, and in its place there are matches between giant robots.
For that's robot for the earth. Jocks. Yep, and nobody can read except for like some people, and that's their job. They're called readers. Yeah,
and there's literally no one I can recognize in this film.
There is one or two. You'll be surprised, but
the 80s were a terrible time for movies.
Shut up, baby.
He's kind of got a point, though.
Thank you all for the Mannequin was in the 80s. I'm just gonna leave it at that.
So was Mannequin too.
Top Gun?
Maybe. I liked Mannequin.
I did too.
I did too.
I wasn't actually making fun. I actually liked Mannequin.
We've really gone off on a lot of tangents today, and it's kind of fun.
We do that from time to time.
Well, Captain's, you know what?
In the corner looking at us going.
I do want to bring up like some of the random like side stuff that you would not expect from Guillermo del Toro. Like, for instance, well, he had his acting turn in Death Stranding. Yep. So I remember playing it, and then, you know, about however long into the game, all of a sudden this guy walks out and I'm like, that's Guillermo del Toro. What's he doing there? And as far as I can see, that's all he's doing. He doesn't have any production credits whatsoever. So I guess Kojima was like, hey dude, wanna be in a game?
Wow.
And then like his turns in animated stuff like Rise of the Guardians and you know, you mentioned mm-hmm. Troll Hunters and all of that. So yep. Just like, you know, he just seems in some ways like a big kid, which makes mm-hmm. me really happy. Well,
and it kind of looks like a hobbit, so that's kind of cool too.
I like that he completely disavows a mimic in any way, shape, or form.
He did that? Yeah. Oh, that was so bad.
He disavows, like, that's not mine. I don't like that one.
So bad.
We all have those. We do.
Well, it's
like I mentioned before we started recording. I think it's the caged bird or it's just something like that, which is a little short film. Y'all, I could not get more than like 4 minutes into it. It was so bad. And it's a great reminder that great artists
mess up.
Everybody has something poopy out there.
So what you're saying is he could be on a podcast and somebody would say you're wrong constantly to them, you know, even though he's like a brilliant genius. Is that what you're saying?
No, is that
what you're saying?
You're wrong. Incorrect. No, you're wrong.
are we just throwing the term brilliant genius around now? Like, is everybody getting named that now?
Nope.
Dub, I'm surprised. Dub, I'm surprised you haven't brought up his stint in Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I didn't know he did a stint in Always Sunny.
He was
McPoyle.
Yeah, he's the one with like the hat with the bird in it.
Oh my gosh, I know who the. Oh, I gotta rewatch that now. Dang it!
That is so brilliant. Yeah, he's the one McPoyle with the bird.
Now, if you don't watch It's Always Sunny, you have no idea why I'm so excited right now. But then, just like every bit of excitement, just like flooded up to my head right now. I'm like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
McPoyle.
But that's what it.
He's drinking the milk.
I definitely agree with Satomi, where it feels like. He's doing his job to have fun, and the people that he meets along the way, they know that about him. So they're like, "Hey, you want to come do this? Sure, why not? I'm not doing nothing, so I'm gonna come have fun on Always Sunny in Philadelphia, or I mean, just random stuff, and it's great." Mm-hmm.
And he works. He's got a lot of repeats. Yeah. Like he works with a lot of the same people, and I don't think it's a matter of nepotism. Mm-mm. I think it's a matter of. They're like, this is so.
I don't think that's nepotism.
We have to play.
Yeah, I think
you know what I mean.
That's honestly, that's what makes a director to me anyway more endearing. Like Kevin Smith, you are going to know half the people in every Kevin Smith movie because you just know them by now.
Tim Burton,
Adam Sandler. I mean,
Quentin Tarantino.
You get it? Yeah, there's these people. It's like I love that. It makes it feel like a family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's super good friends with Ron Perlman. That's why Ron Perlman got Hellboy.
Yeah. And who would have thought him for Hellboy, honestly?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he was brilliant in that role.
Well, and I mean, if you also think about it, one that's constant in not in every movie he's ever done, but in a lot of them, Doug Jones is in almost every movie the man has ever done.
Yes.
Because he is some sort of creature in every movie. It wasn't until The Shape of Water where he was like a lead.
Yeah.
But he never said a word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me throw this out for everybody. If everyone, I'm sure everybody has sold their soul and has the Disney Plus. Go watch The Simpsons season 24, Treehouse of Horror. He's not in it. He directed this couch gag.
That's the opening gag.
Yeah, I remember it had the eyes in it.
Is there like a cyclops in it or something?
There's some weird stuff going on in there.
Well.
There's some weird stuff.
And like, he looks like, Blaise was saying, he looks like a kid almost. He almost looks like Santa before he turned all light. And then you watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And you're like.
He just looks like he's having a good time.
It just looks like he's going on a quest to Mordor, you know?
Right, like he looks like he's just this giant. Almost happy, jolly, dorky kind of guy, and then you turn around and like,
yeah.
Did you just create the Fauno and the Pale Man and what's going on in here?
Like an orphanage with the kid with the sack on his head. And
yes.
He looks like the guy you'd be friends with, and not take him everywhere, but you go on like about half your adventures with.
Yeah. Well, and like
you can't take too much of him. But you can take enough of him. He's a nice guy, you can tell
that he's having fun, and you can tell that he's a little off too, because when they were talking about doing Shape of Water, they said, well, isn't this just the creature from the Black Lagoon? He goes that's my favorite monster movie of them all. He goes, this is just what happens if the creature got the girl. I'm like, okay.
Yes.
Oh, I know the perfect fairy tale that I want to see him do. And I don't think it's been done correctly live. And I would like to see him do Beauty and the Beast.
That would be a good one for him.
Interesting.
Give him that world. I mean, he doesn't have to have Chip and, you know, the teapots and all that. Have them turn into creatures, all his house staff and all that. That would be amazing to see.
I have a feeling that the Beast wouldn't get the girl in the Guillermo del Toro version.
He'd rip her arms off and eat her.
Yeah, he'd probably
exactly.
eat her.
Exactly. Yep.
After he turned into a human.
Yes.
Yes.
Courtney, you kind of said it a little bit, but yeah, I think we'll see how he does with Pinocchio.
Once that's coming up next.
Very excited about
I'm
that.
Sure.
And the witches.
Yeah.
And the so witches. Tell me anything about some of these new projects that are coming out. You guys seem like you're very informed on them. Let's start with Pinocchio. What do we know about it? Anything?
Stop animation, right?
Uh-huh. It's completely stop motion animation.
Stop motion.
Ewan McGregor is Jiminy Cricket.
Ooh.
That's nice.
Does he say he has the high ground?
That was accidentally. Yeah, you're right. It was completely accidentally. Yeah. And then I know Tilda Swinton is it Tilda or Cate Blanchett?
One of them is in there. I think it's Cate Blanchett.
I think it's Cate Blanchett.
Let's see. Let me see.
They're not interchangeable.
Yes, it's
Cate
Blanchett. Oh, Tilda Swinton is
they're
also
both in it.
They're both in it. Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Ron Perlman is in it because you knew that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, of course, David Bradley is going to be Geppetto. Yeah, so it will be interesting. That's all I know about it.
There's not that much out there on it yet.
How about the witches? You guys have been talking a lot about this. I've heard you guys talking a lot about it. What is this supposed to be?
The witches is
green long nose witches or something else?
Well, the witches.
Like craft.
The witches.
Have you never seen the witches?
Have you never seen the witches or read the book?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it was originally a book by Roald Dahl. it was originally a book by Roald Dahl, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There was a movie, I want to say 90s? Was it 90s? Yeah.
Early 90s, late 80s.
Yeah.
Early 90s.
And it was an English film. And it had Angelica Houston as the Grand High Witch. Mm-hmm. And it takes place, there's a kid and his grandmother, and they go to a seaside village, and unbeknownst to them, there's also a convention of witches. And so he gets turned into a mouse, and hijinks.
So kids movie, but definitely not?
Yeah, it's typical Roald Dahl.
So it was, very much one of those movies that was a kid's movie, but it was scary. So like what Disney Channel like used to play before they started just playing like cartoons and stuff like that. They used to play like actual movies. This was one of those movies that was on, because I remember watching it when I was a kid.
I vaguely remember
and being
that.
Scared of stuff. And it looks like, it came out in 1990.
It actually just occurred to me how much Del Toro and Roald Dahl have in common.
Mm-hmm.
As far as going to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that that you said the thing about Alice in Wonderland, now it just makes you wonder, every single property that Tim Burton got, Dumbo, Alice in Wonderland, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, every single one of those properties, if you would have given it to Del Toro, it would have probably been significantly better.
You couldn't do much worse with Dumbo.
I don't know how Tim Burton managed to do it, but he pulled all the heart out of Dumbo. Miss Peregrine's School for Peculiar Children, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
like...
I watched it.
Was that Burton?
Yeah, it was Tim Burton.
Oh, wow.
I had no interest. It looked so bad.
I watched it, but it was just so forgettable. It was just
right, I don't remember much of it. I rented it because I like Eva Green a lot.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was okay. I guess I didn't realize it was a Burton movie, but you're right. It's very forgettable. Like, I don't remember much of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do a little cross promotion here. Satomi, what horror story would you like to read the kids in the hospital when you do the Broadway Hearts? Or would you do that?
I would do it on request. I mean, out of the group of us who
do you have a suggestion of which one
hearts,
do you suggest?
I'm always the villain, so... You know, and I gosh.
So, yeah.
See, because I would be the one who would be suggesting, like, the darkest. I'd probably Hansel and Gretel that out. I'd probably Hansel
the
and
original?
Gretel that out. Yeah, the original. You know, with him sitting in the cage and sticking out a stick to pretend that he's, you know, he's not gaining any weight. And, I mean, any of those Brothers Grimm, anything that's, but I would just read the original versions.
See, yeah, going back, I want to do an episode that we just tell stories, and because I think this would be, with this cast, it would be an absolute blast. But anyway, tell us about Broadway Hearts real quick while we're at it.
All right, Broadway Hearts is an amazing organization of started by Broadway performers to bring the experience of music to kids in hospitals. We're not singing for them or at them. We sing with them. They make requests. We do sing-alongs. And then we also create videos for, you know, kids who don't have access. And we do those by request. So we make them individually for those kids. And then we have a scholarship program. So when they leave the hospital, not a lot of people know it, but both the kids and the families have a really tough time sometimes integrating back after they've had this incredible experience. So we have a program where we pay for lessons in any art form they choose and supply all of the supplies for a year afterwards to kind of give them something to focus on and also something to talk about when they're back among their peers. So, and we are always looking for new hospitals to join, especially now that we're living in Zoom world. So we do virtual visits and virtual sing-alongs, and you never know who might show up. I mean, we've had Nala from Lion King and Christine from Phantom of the Opera. I could go on and on. It's a lot of fun. If you want to know more about it, visit us at BroadwayHearts.org.
Okay. I never want to like gloss over those, because I think this is a very important charity that we do. Like,
oh, yeah.
We all support this charity because I think it's fantastic. So, and I never want to gloss over that as, you know, as a joke or anything else, but yeah.
Thank you. You can also check out our YouTube channel. We have some really fun videos there.
Groovy.
Just saying.
Courtney, I cut you off on saying something.
Well, that's okay.
Do you remember what it was? It was not a
point. Yeah, I was just gonna, what made me think of it is you were talking about if he had gotten Roald Dahl instead of like any of the properties, and then we talked about Satomi, what story would you read? Anything by Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder what he would do with anything by Edgar Allan Poe.
That would be good.
Like Murders in the Rue Morgue, Cask of the Amontillado.
Oh, yeah.
Telltale Heart, or not the Raven.
Telltale Heart.
Yeah. Well, because he could inject, even the stuff that's very human, he could inject that psychological, you know, turn of the screw, to quote somebody else, into that.
Okay, so last question I'm going to ask here. Give me a genre that he hasn't done before. What would you want to see him try? For instance, I would like to see him do a musical, along the lines of Repo or something along those lines. I would like to see him do something like that. What that he hasn't done, what would you like to see as a genre? Just to see him throw us all into something that's just not expected. And you guys weren't expecting this question, but.
I think first of all, I agree with you. A musical would be fantastic, but I think it would be really fun to do some sort of like slapstick comedy. Just to see if he could do it. I think he could. I think he could.
Fair enough. Bly's got any ideas?
Oh yeah. I want to see him do something in the realm of sci-fi. I think that he could build some beautiful. I know
is
that
Pacific Rim
pretty sci-fi.
It's a little bit sci-fi, but I'm talking like outer world sci-fi. Like I can picture him,
aliens.
Yeah, like doing something beautiful with different types of of planets and things like that. Like what was the one Valerian? That one movie that's based around thousands and thousands of worlds, and each of those worlds has like was built differently. I can see him doing something. No, it's called Valerian.
Oh. Is that the Matt Damon one?
No, it was Enchantress from Suicide Squad.
I feel like there were seven of those movies that came out at the same time.
Very forgettable.
But something like that, where he had to build like entire alien worlds. Like I could see him doing something like that really well.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Courtney, you got any ideas? A Hawaiian something or the other from the 50s. I was just throwing that out there for you.
I mean, if we want
to... Hawaii in the 50s.
Would be interesting to maybe
Hawaii 5-0.
Maybe see him do a noir.
Ooh.
I mean,
he could do a noir well.
Yeah, I mean, without monsters.
No, yeah, like... you could, but he could do... You could do like a... like a crime, something noir with, you could do it with monsters. It could have some
There's lots of stories out there that are like that.
Yeah.
So why isn't he doing like every Doctor Who? I'm just asking, because that kind of
would be. I don't think he's done any Doctor Who.
He hasn't.
He probably would kill it with Doctor Who. Yeah. I'm sure he would.
Just doesn't have those connections yet. He just doesn't have those friends.
Well, he's not British. He's like New Zealand, or what is he from? Argentina?
Spanish?
He's Spanish. I don't know.
From Spain?
Sorry?
Oh, he's from Spain. Excuse me.
So he likes the siestas, huh? I don't know. Sangria? That's all Spanish I know.
That's what you like, Dub.
No, he was born.
He's
born
Mexico. He was made in Jalisco. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
University of Guadalajara.
So we were all wrong, so I don't feel so bad.
He sets a lot of movies in Spain, so that's why I thought he was Spanish. Because, like, Pan's Labyrinth is set in Spain.
Yes, And now so I want to go watch it all over again.
So is Kronos, I think.
You should watch.
Kronos was where he met Ron Perlman, right? That was the first project they did together?
I believe so, yeah.
I believe, yeah. Lies, what were you saying? Sorry.
Should watch. Just watch the Trilogia del Guillermo del Toro. Which is Kronos, Pan's Labyrinth, and The Devil's Backbone.
The Devil's Backbone will mess with your head.
Yep,
I am not in. Sorry.
I started watching all that three. One.
That's what you need to do, Dub. You don't have to watch any of his other properties. Just watch those three, and you're good.
I'm code four. Okay, so let's start wrapping this up. I want to throw a quick shout out to Redbubble, and there's like three Redbubble things that are on right now. Woo! Check that out.
Yeah. Everyone but Courtney.
Yeah. Thank you for not doing what I think was about to happen. We would lose that family friendly.
It's the family show.
Yeah. Yep. You don't want to go to the after hours, I heard.
Mm-hmm.
But go to Redbubble.
Oh, maybe we'll do.
Another show.
Go to Redbubble, order something because it's cool. I mean, we don't make much off it, but it's cool to see our merch out there. Go to our Patreon, and that is a big thing. And our commercial should be out next week, I hope.
Hopefully.
I'm deadlining you this week. Yeah. Okay.
We'll see. I'll let you talk about that deadline to Ben. You can take it up with him.
I'll yell at Ben. Don't leave him alone! Yes.
Leave your daddy alone!
The infant has all the power.
That's kind of how that works. Like and subscribe to everything.
YouTube, Instagram, all that.
All of it.
We are all over the place.
It really helps.
It's really cool that most of the people that are commenting all that anymore, I don't know anymore. I'm like, oh, okay. About the last year, I'm like, I don't know most of you guys. This is cool. So we appreciate everybody listening. We all the listener feedback, everything else. Thank you all for giving us an hour of your time once a week, and we hope that we make it entertaining for you. Yep. Until next time, I'm Dub, and with me is Miss Geeky Page. We have Satomi Hoffman, and we have Blize. And until next week, keep on geeking on, kids. We love y'all.
Keep on geeking on.
Keep on geeking on.
You have been listening to the latest episode of the iHeartGeek Show. Make sure you visit our website at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you check us out on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And keep on geeking on to all of you geek rock stars.